The following is a KTCK sports presentation.
Kick it. It's time for the Kick Around, the ticket style show about soccer and all that implies. Two straight hours of HSOs in the Premier League, MLS, the national team, and Champions League. Soccer never stops, and neither do our hosts. Hoping for an off-season at some point, here are Andy Swift and Peter Welton on Sports Radio, 96.7 and 1310, The Tick.
Qué buena la que tiró el Chaka, la que queda ahí para el segundo.
Hada ho, P1s. Welcome to today's Kick Around. As normal, Saturdays 2 to 4 here on Sports Radio, 96.7 at 1310. The Ticket, where you, the good P1, sits around, talks soccer and all that implies. If you happen to be new here, my name is Peter, and with me is my soccer-talking BFF, and man, apparently really good at badminton, Andy Swift.
How'd you know? Just guessed?
No, word on the street.
Yeah.
Is you were really good at the badminton.
One of my many talents.
Are you shuttlecock.
You having fun this summer with all these tournaments and one stops, another one starts?
I am
lots
having.
Lots of soccer, like every day, basically.
Yes. In fact, the other day, the TV was on late at night, and my wife goes, "What tournament are you watching now?" I said, "It's the Gold Cup." And she looked at me with this quizzical look.
What is the Gold
Cup? Like, what is the Gold Cup?
Did you show her the picture you had with the Gold Cup? And like, it's right there, honey.
I did.
What?
I should have, Sam. I did not think of that. But I tried to explain to her, it's essentially our region's version of the two tournaments that I just finished watching from other regions. And her eyes kind of glazed over, and she just walked away.
Was she into the Euros?
No.
Okay, well, then see, it doesn't matter.
My wife is into soccer in only
through the show.
No. In only one scenario, and that involves us taking a trip to some European destination.
Because you go for vacation reasons and you force her to go to soccer.
No. We went on a big, you remember the big trip?
Yeah.
My 50th birthday.
That was your birthday, though. That was,
right.
You know, she was making a special.
But you know what? She loved it.
Mm.
So that's the only scenario in which my wife gives two chocolate squirts about the sport of soccer.
What was her favorite European stadium? Do you remember?
That's a good question. I don't know off
Fiorentina.
The top of my head. She really loved Fiorentina just because it was Italy.
Right.
Not
exactly. That's my point.
Not specifically.
That's my point.
Because it was any particular.
That's my point.
Yeah. Well, that's my point, too. That's why that's the only time she ever likes soccer.
Speaking of Italy.
Yes. We have much to do today, and the run sheet that we printed out says that we're going to talk a lot about the U.S. men's national team and their involvement in the aforementioned Gold Cup. Andy has some suggestions on how to improve the sport. Sports cliche.
I have a project.
And Andy, I think we need to talk about Football Club Dallas.
Oh. Well, they just made more money.
I think we.
Why are we whispering? This is a good day.
Well, it's
for supporters.
It's gonna be a hard conversation.
Oh,
we need to talk about that. Okay. And America's favorite soccer segment, known as the Dribble. Now, we've talked about this. Normally, when we have these tournaments, Jeff Catlin, our boss, affords us the lovely opportunity of doing a nightly wrap-up show during the World Cup.
Yeah, World Cup,
and it makes it so much easier for us to do this because you get to talk about these things in a timely fashion. But with the European Championships and even the Copa America, we essentially get to do this once a week. So here we are, ostensibly a week after the fact.
The recap.
We just get to reflect upon our feelings of both the Copa and the European final.
And I think the Copa reflection goes by very quickly, and we can get that out of the way quickly because I don't think it was a tournament that ultimately they should have played, but they did because of money and broadcasting, but in a continent that is ridden with COVID still, in a country that has high COVID numbers, that took away from the tournament a bit. They couldn't play in front of crowds. That took away. The standard wasn't high.
There were people in the stands for the final?
Yeah, 4,000. They allowed 4,000 people. But what was ultimately taken away from that tournament is that Messi finally got his trophy. Argentina finally won a trophy post-Maradona. Now, Maradona retired after the 94 World Cup. Their last major tournament, the senior team, the last tournament the senior team won was 1993. And during all of Maradona's remaining life, and this is when Messi ramped up and became arguably the best player in the world.
It just dawned on me.
The first tournament they played after Maradona's death.
It took Maradona to die.
For Messi to get rid of his shadow, relax with that jersey, and win the trophy.
That's morbid.
So we're going to officially tie the finality of Maradona's death to Messi finally winning a trophy.
Look, who's we? That's look, Andy.
93, they win. He retires in 94. They don't win anything since. They have the best player in the world. They don't win anything. He constantly criticizes their best player, who becomes a different person
shell
with
of
the
himself.
Jersey.
Yes.
Maradona dies. They play a tournament. They win it.
I think you're on to something, Andrew.
Man, I'm not comfortable with that. That's Andy Swift right there.
I like it. I like it, and I like it a lot.
So that's the takeaway from Copa America. And then Brazil and Neymar just completely folded in that final. Did you watch the game?
I did. I did watch the game, and I had one horrid, shocking concern, which was so late in the game, Argentina is up 1-0. Brazil is pressing and trying to score, and Argentina break, and Messi is presented the easiest opportunity in the world to score a goal, and he so un-Messi-like bonks it. He literally falls to the ground trying to pull a ball back, and instead of making it 2-0, now it's 1-0 Argentina, and Brazil is now on the counterattack, and I thought, oh no!
Yeah.
That you can see exactly what's about to happen here, and he'll never live it down.
And you know the rap on Messi, particularly, and just the rap on Messi, because he doesn't do this at the club level, but with his national team jersey, is that when he's playing in a final, he is not Messi. There is something that happens to him in finals, and he didn't have a great game. Di Maria was the hero.
Yeah.
Now we learn that he was playing with a hamstring issue, and perhaps that contribute. I don't know. Doesn't matter.
But you could see what I'm talking about.
He was the tournament's best player when it's all said and done.
You know what I'm
talking about.
Did you not have the exact same thought when he fouled that up?
Yeah, and I was rooting for Brazil, and so I was like, okay, there's one less.
We're rooting for Brazil?
Yeah, why? Why not?
Oh, that's right. I see, I always get confused which one you Chileans hate more. I always forget.
No, Brazil, like I said, Brazil is the second favorite national team for all South American people after their national team.
Well, out of all of it, the thing I enjoyed the most was the world-class TV broadcast producing that was going on and directing when they did the back-to-back shot of Messi being tossed in the air by his teammates, immediately cut to an absolutely sobbing, like a five-year-old little boy, Neymar, standing there. And that was pretty great.
Maybe so sad.
So you know who hasn't won a senior tournament with his national team jersey now?
I hope he never does.
Neymar.
I don't want him to.
Did you see his new hairstyle?
I don't care.
He's got braids now.
I go, great.
He's the new villain, isn't he? He's just the drive you bonkers dude to watch. I don't know how good he is for the sport. But anyway, he's a talented lad, but a little bit too much on the play acting side, I think.
So then on the other side of the coin, the next day was the big final, Italy and England.
And a brilliant tournament. This was the end to a brilliant tournament.
Yeah.
And what a matchup. Italy, England.
Yeah. And I, in retrospect, really regret me changing of my prediction at the very end of last week's show.
But you did, so it counts.
It
you
does.
Predicted England 1-0. See, that's because anybody can do that. Like, predict one thing at the start and then change it later. And then you have, I really had predicted the other. And so, so you can't be wrong. But I think the point was that because we both initially predicted France, Italy and PKs.
Yeah.
And
Lars
and
said Italy in regulation, I think. Or extra time, I think Lars
and then
said
you went
time.
Back and said England 1-0. The fact was that it was going to be a tight game, and it ended up being that tight game that we had predicted.
Man, there's a lot of reasons to reflect, and I'm sure anybody that cares about it has spent the week reading a lot of reviews and watching YouTube video recaps and listening to podcasts and so forth. And I don't think there's anything that you or I are going to say that's any different or insightful about it, other than the fact that I think if Southgate goes back and watches, he's going to realize that when they went up 1-0. He set his team up to do exactly what the Italians wanted him to do, right? And just allowed them to do what they're really, really good at, mm-hmm. at least even in this current incarnation of that national team. And they just slowly kept chipping and chipping and chipping away.
Right. And the fact, to like, when we previewed the game with Lars, I think there was consensus among us, and not just us, and pundits and fans around the world that were following the tournament, that the way for England to beat Italy was to exploit the space given up on the sides because their two center backs were older and not as speedy. And first, was it second minute that they scored the goal? Fifth minute, something like that. It didn't take very long, and that's exactly how they scored their goal.
And then they just stopped doing it.
Yeah.
And then there's been lots of you actually tweeted me after the game the question that was asked a lot about asking a 18-year-old to take the fifth kick.
Yeah.
And lots of conversation about penalty kicks.
And now Southgate criticized by a lot, and should he continue? And of course he should, because this England team has really gotten a lot better over the last 10 years, and particularly when he's taken over. Because if they win that PK shootout, then none of these questions are asked. He's a genius. You know, and Italy, though, I think were deserving champions of this tournament. When it was all said and done, collectively, from start to finish, they were the best team. You don't agree?
Yes. No, I completely agree. And I, for the once in my life, I actually enjoyed watching the Italians play, because historically they play a very different kind of defense-minded first game, and it drives me nuts. And I really enjoyed watching them this game. You know, theatrics aside and all of that, they were surprisingly the best team in the tournament. I think England ended up playing better and doing things in a way that we didn't expect them to do, being as their conservatism worked for them up until the very end.
And they're young. I think they're third favorites to win the 2022 World Cup now. France still the favorites, remain the favorites. Italy, to me, was kind of a good balance between the tiki-taka of Spain that we saw around the 2010-2014 era, 2008-2014, and this new 4-3-3, get up the field quickly, press high. They were kind of a balance between those two things, and maybe this is what's coming next.
I would agree. At the end, what Italy was successful in doing didn't end up creating a ton of clear-cut chances for them, but the goal they scored was kind of a mix in the box and a scramble and a knock-in from a very short distance.
That's just creating enough pressure that something happens.
Right. Yeah. But all the pressure they did create and all the defending England did up until that moment successfully keep them out from scoring. And so it was a really interesting tactical battle. There was a lot of fascinating aspects to it. As a coach in Southgate, questioning whether or not he should have made subs earlier, I've always been of the impression that the idea of subbing people on at the very last second to take penalty kicks was a terrible idea. But it turns out studies show that it statistically is only like 2% less likely to convert into goals than people that have been on the field for more than 5 minutes.
That doesn't fit the narrative right now.
So, I know. Yeah. I know. I understand. But yeah. I was.
No, I'm kidding. Yeah. Like, stats prove it out, but you would theorize that if a player doesn't have enough touches, he's going to go take that kick cold.
Yeah. But. And I thought it was very clear that all of Southgate's players had the take your time, take a breath mentality. They were all taking a good amount of time to take the kick.
That shootout was ultimately won by Italy's goalkeeper.
Oh yeah.
Who really, you know, the stats, he saved 13 out of 32 PK attempts in Serie A.
Well, first off, he is an absolute oak tree of a human being. Yeah. He's huge. If you didn't take a minute to notice the difference in size between him and Jordan Pickford, you missed out on understanding just how humongous Donnarumma really is.
And he's 22.
And he's just a kid.
And also,
and going to PSG.
5 for 5 winning shootouts at the club and national team level.
Yeah.
So, really quick, Serie A had the most goal scored. Like, players that play in Serie A had, when you add up where players play, Serie A had the most goals scored. Mm-hmm. In this tournament. And it's not just Italian players. It's Ronaldo, Lukaku, Morata.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah. Players that play in Serie A scored. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, more than, like, by a long shot. Juventus, Inter, lots of goal scorers between those two teams. They had the goalkeeper of the tournament, the Italian player. Serie A is an up-and-coming league, and I think we're going to have to, aside from the local angle,
you have to get your Paramount Plus account set up, sir.
We are going to have to start watching a little bit more Serie A.
We are. And the other stat that you pointed out to me, I think it was actually before the game, was the interesting stat about the number of players playing for their national team that play in their local league. Mm-hmm. Can you repeat that stat?
Yeah, Italy had the most players play in their
domestic league
than any other national team.
And the second was?
England.
Yeah.
And they're the two finalists.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
I thought that was a good stat.
And we can take a little bit, the best 11, 5 Serie A, 5 Premier League, 1 La Liga. The best 11 of the tournament, 0 Bundesliga.
Hmm. Well, Italy, by the way, did you see the tattoo that I retweeted today that I think goes down in the Hall of Fame of sports tattoos?
No.
It is a tattoo of Chiellini pulling, horse tackling Sokka. Remember when he horse tackled by the collar Sokka towards the end of the game and jerked him backwards?
Oh, who got that tattoo?
So some Italian person got the tattoo of Chiellini horse tackling Sokka as Sokka looks like he's trying to grab the trophy, the European trophy.
That's awesome.
It's pretty fantastic, and I'll tweet that over on
the
account
as
well. By the
way, he was my favorite player this tournament. 37 years old, the captain of the Italian national team.
And
Chiellini,
father of the goalkeeper. Yeah. All right, congratulations to Italy. Well-deserved. Congratulations, Messi. You deserved that as well. When we come back, the U.S. men's national team has been in business, and we'll talk about them a little bit here on the Kick Around.
Over the years, I've been asked a lot by P1s where they can find a new Chelsea or Liverpool or Barcelona or Chivas jersey, and that answer's always been a little bit hit or miss until now. Soccer90.com is actually based here in North Texas. There's an actual store you can go visit up at Toyota Stadium next to the Hall of Fame in Frisco on Main Street. But you can do all your shopping at their site, soccer90.com. So, for example, if you want one of those new U.S. national team away shirts with the crazy red-blue design, they got those. You want a Weston McKennie Juve jersey? Of course you do. Got those. What about the new Chelsea jersey with Pulisic on the back? Got those. If you don't see what you're looking for, contact them and they'll try to get it for you. And by the way, it's not just jerseys, scarves and balls and stickers and bags and jackets, a little bit of everything from teams all over the globe. And of course, all the FC Dallas stuff you could ever want, including the recently released Mitchell & Ness Dallas Burn Retro Collection, which is so sweet. Soccer90.com, the word soccer, the number 90.com. And because you're a good, sweet, clean P1, use the checkout code KICKAROUND and get 25% off your purchase at checkout. Soccer90.com.
Welcome back to the Kick Around. So, Andy, are we still going tomorrow night?
I'm game.
Okay. I am speaking of tomorrow night's big Gold Cup matchup at the Cotton Bowl between Mexico and El Salvador.
You seem unsure of yourself.
Well, I was surprised that the midweek Mexico game against Guatemala only got 15,000 people. Now, I think that happened. I think there was a surprise thunderstorm.
Yeah, they had to suspend the game for half an hour.
And it started late.
Yeah,
and
started late. And then Guatemala was a last minute. There was a last minute opponent change, although that should have helped attendance a little bit, because who did Guatemala replace? It replaced one of the Caribbean minnows that really wouldn't have drawn.
Curaçao.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Many here locally.
So I'm going to guess that maybe people were saving their pennies up for the Sunday night game against El Salvador.
Yeah. So selling three tickets in 1 week, three games.
At the same venue or the same city.
Yeah, same city is hard. It's the same problem that the national team is facing in Kansas City.
But yeah, that's exactly what I was about to ask, which is...
Yeah, it's tough to sell three games in one city in 1 week.
Yeah, I was getting and seeing a lot of commentary about the U.S. game against Martinique up in Kansas City at Children's Mercy Park, which is a beautiful venue and perfect for soccer, in a market that is very hungry for the sport and smart about it. But that place didn't even look half full for that game, and I think it's exactly what you're talking about. The Federation prices those tickets very high. Mm-hmm. And if you've got three of those games in the course of less than 10 days...
Yeah. Now, this is CONCACAF, but yes,
CONCACAF,
same idea.
Right.
Same idea.
Yeah. Okay, CONCACAF. Yeah. You still have to sort out what that's going...
Yeah.
You know, if you're a fan, if those tickets are $75-$80 a game, you're not going to all three of those games.
And Mexico here locally played last Saturday, played Wednesday.
At the Death Star.
Yeah, played...
Wednesday at the Cotton Bowl.
And then they play Sunday, tomorrow. So I think in terms of... day of the week to attend a game, the more appealing games are Saturday night, obviously, and Sunday.
What was the attendance for the Saturday game? Do you know? You were actually there.
Yeah, I was there.
We have to talk about that.
Sure.
So if you don't know, Andy, last Saturday at the Death Star, AT&T Stadium for Mexico...
Trinidad and Tobago.
Andy was the PA announcer. Were you Spanish only or English?
No, I was bilingual. One person does both.
Of course you were.
Yeah.
Andy was the poor soul who was tasked with admonishing the crowd for yelling
the chant. The goalkeeper chant.
It's not even it's like one word.
Yeah, the goalkeeper whatever.
And it's a slur. It's the F word in Spanish.
Yeah, it's
the gay slur.
Yeah, right there
in
yeah,
Spanish.
Right.
Friendship.
Yeah,
right.
Which has caused all sorts of calamity and controversy and all that stuff.
So in the exhibition matches that Mexico was playing in the U.S. leading up to the Gold Cup, actually that it was they had tapered off and they were doing well.
Mm-hmm.
Denver, I think they played in L.A. Few problems, not a lot. They came here to Arlington.
In a game that counts.
But things were okay. And there's a whole, like, pregame. There are pregame announcements. The players are on the video.
Sending
messages.
Don't say the naughty word.
During the game, every once in a while, you remind. Everything was fine. Until, Mexico's out shooting Trinidad and Tobago, 30-1, and they're not scoring a goal.
0-0.
And a call goes against them, and, you know, a little bit. So then we have to ramp up the warning to the next level. You know, if this continues, the referee will suspend the game. So, okay, I'm on. And then there was a bad call or wrong call or something, and then they just let it out, and then boom, I had to admonish.
And poor Andy got booed by 40,000 Mexicans.
Now,
41,229. Yeah,
that's right. Did
that hurt your feelings at all, Andy?
No, I was just glad I was up in the booth and far away. So I had to do it three times, though, because the referee... Yeah, thank you. Kind of like it felt like that. Now, some of them were booing at their own people for doing that, but I'm sure the majority were booing
I think they're all yelling
me.
At Andy.
Yeah. So, good times.
And it never stopped. And yeah, so the U.S. has been, I don't know, this has been weird to watch because we know that they've kind of thrown out a side that Berhalter is attempting to, you know, kind of judge what he's got for World Cup qualifying.
Yeah, the BC team, I guess, right? That's how you would describe it.
Yeah, and he's missing a couple of players like Reggie Cannon is hurt. And
It's still an important tournament, I think, because it is important to find the depth for the team that will go out to try to qualify for the World Cup. You know, this is where you get players 18 through 23.
Yeah, it is. But, you know,
or a starter here or there, maybe.
You kind of struggle to win the first game. You probably don't play Haiti as well, but then people tend to forget how difficult Haiti historically has been for the United States.
Mm-hmm. I think the takeaway from the Haiti game, what was more disappointing, Haiti played, they had five starters out. They played a defensive game. They just basically just parked the bus a little bit. They didn't play the Haiti that we're used to. What was disappointing about the U.S. was not so much the inability to break that down and get through the lines, was there seemed to be a lack of fire.
Yeah.
Not motivation, but fire from the U.S. team. Berhalter called it out, and that changed a lot game two. I think we completely saw a different U.S. team in that regard.
Yeah, Martinique. was a different game, a massive blowout, and they were only one goal short of going into the game against Canada, which we'll talk about later, in leading the group. So there are lots of things out of these two performances that you can take away and say those are really good, and things that you can say that are not so good, and then have caveats on top. Well, it's Martinique, right? Oh, these guys are playing, and you know, this isn't our best team.
Yeah,
there are always those kind of caveats.
Yeah, and Martinique, and as opposed to what Haiti did, Martinique actually went out to try to score some goals and make a game of it, and they opened up a little bit more and made it easier, I think, for the U.S. to exploit space.
Now, I got a question for you because you're our official CONCACAF man of record.
What did we do
wrong? You didn't do anything wrong. This is a genuine. I need you to educate me.
Okay.
I don't understand how a country, Martinique, which is a national team that is not allowed to even qualify for the World Cup, like they don't fall into that list of 200 and so many countries.
Yeah. Okay.
But yet they're allowed to organize and participate in a CONCACAF tournament.
Yes, it's because Martinique is not officially a country. Martinique is part of France. They're considered part of the euro. Their national language is French. Their money is the euro.
Oh.
They're an associate member of CONCACAF. But they can lobby FIFA to one day allow them to qualify for World Cups, kind of like Gibraltar did. It's a mess. Countries that can qualify for World Cups, some countries that cannot. For example, Puerto Rico can qualify for a World Cup. But they're the equivalent of Martinique, a little bit, you know, to the U.S. in terms of being a part of the U.S.
Does Puerto Rico go through the qualifiers?
Yeah, they go through
qualifiers?
The World Cup qualifying process. Oh. You can also ask, why does Great Britain get to field four teams when they can only send one
to the Olympics?
It's all about politics and lobbying and timing and how you approach FIFA with what you'd like to do and then whether FIFA approves it or not.
Well, I'm going to just recommend that if Martinique was to ever consider asking FIFA to allow them to qualify for the World Cup, before they do that, could they spend some time, effort, and energy on improving their national team crest? Because it looks like they just stuck a soccer ball on a defunct marketing company's logo and stuck it on their shirt. Pretty bad.
Oh yeah, this the LFM.
Yes. Yes, it looks like a telemarketing firm logo with a soccer ball attached to it.
This is terrible.
I told you.
We'll put Peter in charge of kit production for
It looks like some sort of mid-level marketing scam.
That's just what I said.
Yes. When I start getting these Minnow assignments again, I'm going to start sending you back images of kits, and then you can let me know what needs to be improved.
So the Gold Cup, there is one more set of group games to be played, and then the quarterfinals, semis, and finals. And they're playing, and I didn't even realize this, so they're going to play the semifinals on a Wednesday, Thursday, and then the final is that following Sunday. So all these games are super compressed into these tiny windows.
They're playing every 3 or 4 days now. I mean, it's standard, but not ideal.
All right, so we're on for tomorrow night. You and I have made the pact. We're going to take the train. We are taking the train?
Yeah. Let's
we're going to go to Fair Park. Yeah. It's a late game. It doesn't start till 9.
Take your nap.
And then we're probably going to leave early.
Take your nap.
Take the safe exit out.
You hang with me, Pete. We'll be all right.
All right. You'll speak for me?
Sure.
I appreciate
it. By the way, it's Mexico El Salvador. You're going to stick out? Anyway.
He's going to be very bright.
I shouldn't wear my don't tread on me.
Yeah, no, yeah.
U.S. jersey.
Neutral colors tomorrow.
Okay,
please.
I won't. All right, so we'll talk.
Football soccer!
We'll talk more about the Gold Cup and the U.S.-Canada game that Andy and I have to arm wrestle over here a little bit later in the show. But when we come back, Andy would like to change the sport of soccer and all that it stands for, and we'll do that next here on the Kick Around. Andy, I know you don't want to, but just to remind you, we really, really, really need to talk about Football Club Dallas. So we'll...
Do we?
Unfortunately, Sam, yes. I think there are some issues that need to be addressed, both good and bad, so we'll do that here before the end of the show. But first,
yeah,
Andy, you and I are famous in the radio world, the soccer broadcasting world.
Yes.
Meh.
For our... Our desire to change the game for the better.
Just polish it. We just want to polish it and improve it.
My manifesto?
Yes, the Peter Welpton manifesto.
That went absolutely nowhere.
It got picked up by journalists in Europe like Lars.
That law enforcement will be reading one day.
And the New York Times.
And the New York Times.
But then ultimately had no effect on the calendar. But anyway, got published.
Hey,
yeah.
Little grains of sand is how it
a little bit here and there.
Yeah.
Today on Twitter, somebody asked, what's the one change to the sport that you would like to see tried, but not necessarily permanently implemented?
You just want to see how it plays out.
And mine, my current fascination with changing the game is the throw-in.
Oh.
Because if you watch any game of soccer, the rules to the throw-in are never enforced. People are picking both one foot up. People are not throwing the ball over their head. People are not really doing it correctly.
Yeah, it's just kind of overlooked and like, just get the ball
and
back.
And I'm just thinking, if we're not going to enforce the rules of the throw-in, what would the sport look like if you were allowed to do whatever you wanted to do as long as the ball was still quote-unquote thrown in, whether it's one hand, two hand, underhanded? Seriously, think about it.
Bowling style.
Whatever.
Front flip.
Well, that's already, you can still front flip. You can front flip legally as long as both feet are on the ground when you let the ball go. That's how front flips are executed.
Do it mid-flip when you don't have to have your feet on the ground.
But my point being is, what I think you could get some really cool results out of that.
Sure, okay.
I mean, if you're not with...
I don't know. That's a little tricked up. It seems weird.
How is it any more tricked up than what we're getting now?
There's 90%.
Yeah, I would totally disagree with you.
Come on.
Now I want you to, next game you watch,
okay,
I want you to make sure you pay specific attention to two aspects of the rule. Where the ball is released and whether or not both feet are on the ground when it's done. Oh, and whether or not they actually took it from the position in which they were supposed to take it from in the first place.
All right, Gold Cup, you're on watch.
Telling you, I'm onto something there.
I thought you were going to say something else about what the one thing you'd like to see changed.
No, that's my current. That's the one. As I watch soccer games these days, that's the one thing that keeps running through my mind. It's like that's a foul throw. They should have made him take it over.
But when it comes to tournaments, you have another one.
Yes, I do. Yeah, and that is that I'm frustrated by the use of PKs as a decision. You know, and this all started with Bruce.
Explain to me this whole penalty kick thing.
And when Bruce asked that in the mix a few weeks ago, I was like, my brain locked up, and I thought, that's the weirdest question in the world. But then I thought, I'll be damned if Mr. Levine isn't onto something.
Huzzah!
Yeah, because games shouldn't be decided. Like in the knockout rounds of tournaments like the World Cup and the Euros and Copa America, games shouldn't be decided. The winner shouldn't be decided. Who advances in a major tournament shouldn't be decided with what essentially comes down to a flip of a coin. Right?
Yes, I agree.
Which is the
although the way people take penalty kicks these days, I think it's becoming less and less of a flip of a coin. I think people are psyching themselves
out too much.
Marcus Rashford is psyching themselves out by trying to trick them up too much.
Yeah, so what's your solution? And the reason is they can't replay the game because of broadcast windows. They can't keep going with overtime because, you know, players would die.
Broadcast windows.
Yeah. Right. Also true. Right. Yes, right. So what is your suggestion?
Well, it's always been that they should move to the 35-yard shootout, which is something that was popularized with the old NASL and then was part of the original first few seasons of Major League Soccer. 5 seconds from 35 yards, player got to run up. And if the ball came, I think I'm remembering this correctly, if the keeper saved it but it rebounded to the player or came off the post, they could still finish it as long as it was within the five-second window. And I think that is a better, more fair way of determining that. Now, let me also say this because people get this confused. I'm not saying that if in the course of a game somebody throws a hand up and blocks a ball going in, that should be a traditional PK,
right?
A penalty kick.
Yeah, you're the way to decide the game.
Yes.
The PK shootout.
In some sort of tournament-style knockout, when it comes to that, instead of PKs, the 35-yard run-up.
It's just a more fair assessment of the skill level and talent level, I guess, that each team has, because you're incorporating more elements into what you have to do to succeed, both from a keeper's perspective and a shooter's perspective.
Yes. And I am the one thing that the holy grail to my personal collection of stuff would be to get my hands on the original – Dallas Byrne shootout clock that they used to roll out on the field back in 1996.
Yeah. It's got to be somewhere.
I'm sure it's
been gotta find it.
Trashed.
How do you not know where it is, Andy? You of all people should
I've
know.
I've asked, and nobody can seem to track it down.
I don't think anybody knows where any of the original 10 are.
Yeah.
Because there was 10. Every team had one.
Yeah.
And nobody, I even told Pablo Maurer, that should be like his next big article is the hunt for the MLS countdown clock.
Somebody one day is going to show up with all 10 and declare victory. So you know what, Peter? I will make this part of the World Tournament project that I'm working on now. In fact, I want you to come with me to one day present this in Zurich. When this World Tournament project is ready to be presented to FIFA, come with me. Because we'll incorporate this into the...
Name the date.
I feel like you need all of us to go to Zurich if that's the case.
After I'm done tinkering and refining it, yes?
I feel like this is going to be an international incident. It's what's going to end up happening.
I didn't know you were working on your own manifesto.
So this it's not a manifesto. It's a project.
Oh. Manifesto sounds pretty nefarious.
Yes. That's the Welpton. And I don't want it to be confused. So this all came about because FIFA a while back, and there's more noise starting to come out again now about wanting to host the World Cup every 2 years.
Okay, isn't that just Arsene Wenger doing that? Or is that like a legitimate thing people are really seriously considering?
Anytime smoke starts to come out like that from FIFA headquarters, it eventually leads to some drastic change that we hate, like the 48-team World Cup.
Mm-hmm.
That'll be... Like, World Cups moving forward are going to be 48-teamers, right?
And 2026, right?
Yeah. So, and that takes away from the standard. And a World Cup every 2 years, I think what people don't want is for the tournament not to be as special, right? So there is a solution where we can improve so many things. Not only are we going to make the tournament more special than it is now, we're going to improve revenues for FIFA.
Specialer.
Yes. Games are going to be more exciting. More little countries can participate. More countries will be able to host World Cups. Everybody wins.
This is your plan that you're about to explain to me.
Yes. So the NCAA style tournament, the March Madness.
I'm officially going to call this the Andy plan.
Okay. Everybody loves March Madness, right? Mm-hmm. NCAA college tournament, right?
Yes.
And that's played every year. Imagine if that was played every 2 years. How much more exciting that would be, and how much, like, the March Madness tournament would go from, like, being really exciting to over-the-top exciting.
I think you'd get a lot of really unhappy seniors every other year that don't get to play in
because it's called, right, but from the fan perspective, right,
okay.
You'd be hungrier for it. So what we would have is a 64-team World Cup played every 2 years, single elimination, and the countries are ranked 1 through 64, based on the FIFA rankings.
Wait, are you suggesting this in lieu of the every 4 year World
yes.
Cup?
Yes. So every 2 years we have one of these. One of these tournaments, and now you're thinking, how is this going to provide more money for FIFA because you're losing all the group stage games? But if you have a 64 team tournament and you play it NCAA style,
mm-hmm.
you get the same amount of games that you get in a 32 team World Cup. So they don't lose any money that way. And now you're playing it every 2 years because the format allows you to play it every 2 years. You're making more money than you are now if you're FIFA.
Mm-hmm.
Smaller countries get to participate because now it's expanded to 64 teams.
But if you're doing this every 2 years, when are you going to qualify?
Ah, this is where the Nations League tournaments and the Gold Cups and the Euros.
Yeah, but when are you going to play those? In the off years.
And they serve... So now you don't have qualifiers. Now you have those tournaments that are played, but they affect your FIFA ranking.
So the top 64?
So now you want to do well in those because you want to move up in those rankings, and you also want to get a high ranking heading into the 64-team tournament so you can be a top seed. The teams that get to the final will play a maximum of 5 games as mm-hmm. opposed to 7 now. So it's less taxing on the players.
But most every
It'll
team will play
injuries.
Just one or two games.
Yeah, but the big teams, the ones that deserve to go farther, are going to play more games. And you're playing every 2 years anyway. And the beauty is that you divide it into 4 regions, just like the NCAA tournament. So 4 countries host every World Cup, and you whittle it down to 4 teams from those 4 regions.
Mm-hmm.
And then one country hosts the final four.
The final four.
Yeah. So you're making more money. You have more exciting games. It's less taxing on players. Nations League, Gold Cup, those tournaments mean something now. smaller nations get to feel like they're more part of it. Imagine if you're like, I don't know, give me a, like, if you're Luxembourg, no, Luxembourg's too small. They wouldn't make, they wouldn't even make the top 64. But if
Ireland.
If you're Ireland and you open up as a 15th seed and you have to play Italy, for example, a 2 seed,
mm-hmm.
and it's your big moment to shine. What if you win that game? Cinderella stories are created, and it's much easier to create these Cinderella stories in a format like this than in the World Cup that we're used to. And it'll prevent the same 7 countries from winning every World Cup like we've had over the last 100 years.
See, my initial reaction is meh, but you, of everybody I know that knows anything about this game, you are the walking encyclopedia and the biggest fan of the World Cup.
Yeah, it's my number one thing.
And I'm genuinely sincere when I say this. Like, I literally don't know anybody. Like, I could take the next 100 people I know that mm-hmm. know something about the World Cup, and all of them combined don't even come close to you in terms of love and knowledge of that particular event. So the fact that you...
Yeah.
are suggesting this as an alternative is pretty amazing.
Yeah. It
and now I need to really stop and think about it.
Still serves a purpose. And one argument is these little countries in the early, like in that first game, like 16 playing one, they're just going to bunker down. They're, you know, they're going to go play for PKs. So play for PKs.
Are you still...
We have shootouts now. So, you know, if you're Armenia and you think you can beat Spain in a 35-yard shootout, let's do it.
Okay. Are you still calling it the World Cup?
See, that's why I'm calling it the World Tournament Project, because I think the name needs to...
So no, then, is your answer.
So the World Tournament Project.
Yeah.
WTP.
That's right. It's getting refined.
Well, that's just
it's
the project.
Not ready.
That's
it's,
the project name.
Yeah.
That's not the name of the tournament.
No.
Okay.
Naming the tournament is part of the project.
Okay.
And perhaps we should have a name. Once we go present this at FIFA headquarters, we should have a name or two that to suggest.
The Kick Around Cup.
Kick Around Cup.
Soccer Palooza. What was the name of
the
what
Jolt?
Was, no. What was the name of that Sidekicks promotional event at Inwood Soccer Center that Mike Reiner did the commercial for that we found that old audio for?
Was it Soccerama?
That had the Gorilla.
Yeah, the Gorilla was there. God, I know. And there was like face painting and there was
yes.
a bunch of others.
And it was
I think I've seen that before.
Yes.
Well, what was it, Mike? Tell us.
I'm Mike.
What was it? There was the name of that. It was like a promotional soccer event at Inwood Soccer Center back in like 1983.
It wasn't Soccer Palooza, right?
It was. No. I don't think it was. No, I don't think it was Soccer Palooza. And
soccer extravaganza.
Yeah. Well, whatever it was, that's what you should call this.
There you go.
Or Soccer Palooza.
It'll be better on the players because you can spread, you know, 5 games instead of 7 from start to finish.
Where you're going to.
An extra day of rest.
Where I think people are going to push back mm-hmm. is the idea that their team, being a number one seed, could be knocked out.
Correct.
In 1 game or 2 games.
Now you get to play another World Cup game in 2 years as opposed to 4.
Yeah,
and you know
but
what?
It's not the World Cup anymore.
You know what? But the group stage, how boring is the group stage compared to the knockout rounds in Champions League and World Cup? And now every game matters.
Yeah.
And because they play a maximum of 5 instead of 7 games, there's less rotation you have to do if you're the top seeds. You come out with your A team, you got to beat 16. If you got to win that game 6-0, you win that game 6-0, 8-0.
Wow. Andy Soccerpalooza coming to you soon.
Gotta
here.
Oh.
Sam doesn't like the Soccer Palooza idea.
Going to Zurich with us. Josh, are you in?
Sure.
Josh just wants to travel to Zurich. Peter, I know you're in.
Yeah. Listen, again, I don't know anybody that knows as much about the tournament and also the ins and outs of all the tiny nations and how this would positively impact them than you.
This is provided that FIFA really is mandating that they move to every two-year tournament.
Yeah.
Which would be a disaster under the current format.
All right, Andy, you've got me in your pocket.
All right.
I'm on my way to Zurich with you pitch this amazing idea. When we come back, hey, everybody, we kind of need to talk about FC Dallas, and we'll do that next here on the Kick Around. Tomorrow, Andy and I face off nationalities as the U.S. faces Canada in a decisive Gold Cup matchup. And we'll talk about that here in a few seconds. But first, you know, local teams have ups and downs. I'm always fascinated by baseball as a sport because I always, as somebody that's not a fan of baseball, part of the reason is I don't understand how you as a baseball fan can go into a 183-game season, whatever the number, crazy number of games you guys play in a season. Oh, okay, whatever, tomato, tomato. Knowing that your team's going to suck for 162 games.
Yeah, tough.
And I don't under, like, night after night of suckage after night, and I don't get it.
You appreciate the sport. You watch the sport.
But other teams have good seasons and bad seasons, and for our little team from Frisco, Football Club Dallas, we're having a bad season. Not we, they.
Oh, now it's they, Peter.
It's
when things are rolling, he's like, yeah, we're going to take on this team. We made the playoffs.
And so here we find the club sitting at next to last place. They've not won a game on the road. They've only won two games all season. And that's one side of the coin. But then on the other side of the coin, we keep seeing all these amazing headlines and stories being posted, not just locally, not just nationally, but internationally, about guys being sold from the club or loaned out to European teams.
Let me give you a stat. Money generated, revenue generated from player sales from players that were developed in your academy. Number one in MLS, FC Dallas, $19 million.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, Philadelphia Union, $5.7 million. Number three, Vancouver, $2.5 million. It's like a huge drop-off
okay,
to
now
number
wait a,
two.
Okay, that must be within a limited time frame because Alfonso Davies sold for a record amount.
Maybe it's over the last couple years.
Well, it's probably, yeah. Cause
since 2015.
When no, you might want to double check that because Alfonso.
Sorry, this is the net revenue from player sale.
Ah, okay. Well, that would make more sense because I'm sure they spent a lot of that money
versus,
because that's what Dallas
purchases
does not do.
Yeah, so they have a net of $18.5 million.
So Dallas, and the reason why we're talking about this is that in this particular week, Dallas has announced two things that were very impressive. Good news. Thomas Roberts, who was not getting any playing time here, which is a completely different story and a very confusing one at that, has been loaned to a team in the Austrian Bundesliga that just got promoted.
Okay.
And they're excited to have him, and I'll be damned if the kid didn't go out in his first game, sub on in the second half, and score literally 22 seconds into the game.
That's how you do it.
But the bigger news was that Dallas once again sold and profited from the sale of a homegrown player, and this time being Tanner Tessman, mm-hmm. who is the kid that signed with them last year, and he has signed with the club that is newly promoted in Italy, Serie A, yeah. Venezia.
Yeah. The third FC Dallas player now playing in La Liga, FC Dallas Academy player. Playing in Serie A, not La Liga.
First,
Serie A.
Right. So Weston McKennie, yeah. who was in the academy but mm-hmm. never signed for the club, is mm-hmm. now at Juventus, and Brian Reynolds,
right.
who is at least for the time being
at Roma
with Jose Mourinho.
But sold to Roma,
yes. Yeah. So in the last 18 months, FC Dallas has approximately benefited financially somewhere in the $15 million mark in sales, which, by the way, if reports and math is correct, is about the same of their annual income from the fees they collect from all the kids that play in their youth system, both boys and girls, all the way from the lowest level yeah. up before the academy. And that's a lot of money. So you're talking about $30 million. Mm-hmm.
But there's expenses related to that academy.
Absolutely. Yeah. And okay. I also do think that all, because the big question is, well, Dallas is making all this money selling players. Why aren't they buying better players mm-hmm. otherwise?
Is that your question to me?
Well, I'll let you answer it.
Well, I think we have to consider the relative and when the timing of all this. I mean, it's been fairly recent that Dallas has really started to net a profit from selling academy players. Or players that they've signed and then sold after signing them from other parts of the world. That's a recent, not phenomenon, but it's kind of a recent activity that they're netting this money. So it takes a while to turn that profit into player purchases that have an impact on your senior team. You just don't do you. It's just not automatic. Like 3 months later, then you turn in that $5 million into a purchase that makes sense. I think a fair question is, why haven't the player purchases in years past why haven't they panned out, right?
Mm-hmm.
And why haven't they had a better hit rate? That's a fair question. You know, they've hired a new technical director, and hopefully he changes things. But I think it's unfair to expect instant results from those sales to turn into instant impact players on the senior team. Because this is all relatively new in the grand scheme of things.
I would agree with you.
It's 18 months. You just said 18 months.
Well, that's just within the last. That's it within the last 18 months. Yeah. But Dallas has been one of the more productive clubs in Major League Soccer in selling off talent, whether it be Nedeljkov, the Eastern European guy that came in and wanted to leave. Yes. They made a couple million bucks on him.
So I'm going to ask you a question now. The bad form this team is in now, you know, second to last place, whatever. The poor start to this season. What do you attribute it to?
I think A, poor roster construction, and B, trying to ask a guy with very little professional coaching experience to take over in that position.
Okay, let's address the first point, mm-hmm. Roster construction. Roster construction, as you know, for a senior team at any league, professional level, is not a 6-month process or a 12-month. So a lot of the issues that you have with your roster are issues with roster construction from 3 years ago.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
And then you pay the price. And sometimes, you know, and the number 9 signing didn't pan out.
Which
Hara,
one?
The recent one. The one that we on the show had
one?
High expectations, and we thought this was a good signing. We agreed with the signing.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's that. So that there's lag time between proper roster construction and when you start to see and when you start to reap the benefits of proper roster construction.
Well,
right? And then the coaching and experience has nothing to do with player sales and how you allocate that money.
Well, I would disagree. Well, no, not with that part. But I do think the quality of the coach is the type of person that can figure their way. Like, so for example, the roster construction today is not that much of a mess than it was when Oscar Perea was here. And Oscar was able to squeeze a lot of lemonade out of what was very much a lemon type sure. roster. This is a different kind of lemon of a roster, but they've got a guy yeah. who just doesn't have the experience to understand and know how to get more out of the team. Let me also say this. When you ask me what I think the reason for the current state of the team is, my real answer is the ownership. Because everything that has occurred with this club is a byproduct of decision-making by Dan and Clark Hunt. For whatever reason, right or wrong, good or bad.
It's not a high-spending team. That's principally what...
Sure.
Right? Right. And so, but that's... I'm sorry, but that's kind of my point, is that they haven't benefited from their academy start to generate revenue like it has been recently till now. And maybe this is an impetus for them to now start spending more money on.
But if you're a fan, if you're somebody that's coming in to wanting to be a fan of this club, and the first thing you notice is that you've got this amazing, you know, national leading academy, which creates these players who might only stick around, if at all, for less than half a season, and then they get sold off. I think there's a conflict and a duality to this team that I think as a fan makes it really, really hard to buy into.
Right. Unless selling that player leads to the revenue that then has the team go out to get high impact players.
Right.
Right, for the senior team. And I agree. My point is, it's very recent that this academy, that FC Dallas, has been able to financially gain from having the best academy in MLS. It took a long time to create that academy, then to get it where it was, and now to reap the benefits.
Okay.
So what I'm saying is, perhaps now that this is happening, we will start seeing more reinvestment back into the senior team. And it has to be the right reinvestment. That's the second part. You can spend a lot of money, but it has to be spent smartly. You know.
Yep.
Right?
So, I agree.
Yeah.
Yes, no.
And so maybe
that's
coming.
That's a stupid thing to say. I completely agree with you.
Yeah. What's a stupid thing?
Saying yes, no. That's a weird way of talking on the radio. I agree with you as a premise.
Yeah.
My concern is that historically, Dan and Clark don't always appear to make the right decisions on acquiring those who they employ to make these decisions for them. So A, an inexperienced coach, and B, a guy from South America who openly admits he knows nothing about the American soccer system or its players.
Right. And we've seen that issue around MLS,
yes,
right? And,
yeah, yes,
right.
But I think that as owners, they've got to be smarter about the people and willing to spend maybe some more money to get decision makers in those positions to maximize this wonderful academy, football factory, Frisco football factory that they've created up there.
Yeah, but now the academy is starting to pay dividends, financial dividends, and maybe this is what it took. You don't know. But this is how businesses work. You know, you start profiting a little bit more and then you start reinvesting back in the business.
Okay.
So that's the hope.
Okay. All right. Let me also say this, because on this show and on Buzz's podcast, I've been very vocal about wondering where Dan Hunt has been during this malaise of a season. Well, he did an interview with John Arnold that was put in the Dallas Morning News this morning, and I've linked to it. You're more than happy to read it there. Your mileage may vary on Dan's public statements, but I don't really know what he's to say. He didn't give the dreaded vote of confidence, that to be fair to him. But I also want to make sure everybody knows publicly, Dan Hunt has an open door to come on the show, and he has for as long as this show has existed. People at the club know this. Dan knows this. We would love to have Dan on the show whenever he wants. We will shove everything off the table to make the airwaves available for Dan. So tonight they play in Portland. The game is on Channel 21 at 9:30 against Portland. This begins a really hard, terrible road stretch of games with they've yet to win any on the road. And I think by and large will be the deciding factor of how the rest of the season goes, the rest of July goes for FC Dallas. So there you go. As best we can do in 10 minutes. Right, Andy?
It's a long conversation, but yes, you know, it's a tough one.
All right. Coming up in mere hours, or maybe a day or so. I don't remember when the game is. I think it's tomorrow night. Andy versus Peter, America versus Canada, the Gold Cup next here on the Kick Around. All right, America's favorite soccer segment known as The Dribble is coming up. Did you know the color green is under fire? And we'll explain that here in a little bit. All right, so we were talking about what has happened in the Gold Cup. But what is coming up is U.S.-Canada.
Mm.
And for the first time in about as long as I can remember, I'm going into a U.S.-Canada game feeling like Canada probably is the slight favorite.
What?
Man, Canada has looked really good in their two games.
Against Martinique and Haiti.
I think they've looked better than the U.S. did versus Haiti and about the same as they did against Martinique.
All right, so we're even. You're trying to sandbag.
No.
I know what you're doing.
I'm seriously not. Well, let me also say this. Is this not Canada's A team?
Yeah,
minus
exactly.
Alfonso Davies.
Davies. Yeah.
And there's another guy that's not playing.
Right. Yes, you're right. So their A team minus their two best players is probably better than on paper.
Or maybe equitable too?
Yeah, a US BC team.
Plus, I think that this Canadian team has been playing together more of late because they've been playing in the Nations League.
True, great point, and they're much improved. And this is not your grandfather's Canada, right? This is
Andy's maple leaf is showing.
Yeah, right. This is a stronger Canadian side.
My point being is going into this game, I think a lot of people think that the U.S. is going to win this game or walk it or whatever. And if Canada wins this game, it will not shock me in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah, and Canada just needs to draw.
That's right.
To
because
get first
what is
place.
What is the tie differential or breaker that has got
goals
them
scored?
Is that what it is?
Yeah. Okay. So the goal difference is the same, but Canada has more goals scored. Therefore, they would finish first if they even up on points.
If they tie.
Yeah, right. If they tie, they both finish with 7 points, goal difference at 6. Canada has an extra goal with 8 versus 7. The thing is, we won't know who they would play finishing first or second until the 20th, which is Tuesday. Monday.
Yeah, because the plan hasn't gone according the way it was supposed to, which is that Mexico has stumbled a bit. Because I think the plan was that the U.S. would win Group B, Mexico would win Group A, and they would be on opposite sides of the bracket so they could end up playing each other in the final.
Right, yeah. They always set up Gold Cup that way. And it is to the 20th is Tuesday, right, Sam? I can't look at the
calendar. Correct.
Yeah, so Tuesday is when we would find out if it's Costa Rica or Jamaica who would play against the U.S. because they play each other, and it depends who finishes first, second there. And then so first in the U.S. group plays second in the Costa Rica-Jamaica group.
Mm-hmm.
And then second place would play first. So those four teams are playing here next weekend, next Sunday. We just don't know who plays who yet at AT&T Stadium.
Right, but what I'm saying is that the Mexico Group A situation is messed up because Mexico stumbled in their opener against TNT and now are in a situation in that game that you and I are going to tomorrow night at the Cotton Bowl that if they end up in second, if they don't get the result they need against El Salvador, they may end up second, which may then also send them as a semifinal.
Yeah.
To end the same side of the bracket as the United States.
Unless the U.S. finishes second, and then they're separated.
And then they're separated again.
So it's hard to speculate right now. It's hard for teams to try to figure out what they need to do. Because the second you start doing
it. So Mexico owns the advantage of understanding how the U.S.-Canada game goes and where the U.S. sits as to what they need to do. Because does Mexico want to play the United States in a semifinal?
No. I would think not. Not in U.S. soil.
So, okay. What time is the U.S.-Canada game tomorrow?
It's earlier in the day.
So, by the time Mexico-El Salvador kicks off at 9 o'clock tomorrow night at the Cotton Bowl, they will know whether or not they want to win, tie, or lose that game. Because if the U.S., for example, was to draw or lose to Canada...
Yeah, the U.S. plays at 4. So if the U.S. were to lose or draw, Mexico would also want to finish second if they want to avoid the U.S. Now, we're getting ahead of ourselves because either way, the U.S. has to play a quarterfinal match here in Arlington on Sunday, next Sunday.
Either against Costa Rica.
Or Jamaica.
Yeah, man, I saw Jamaica. I watched Jamaica against...
No, I haven't seen them play Gold Cup yet.
Yeah, I watched them against last night. Who was the Grenadine?
Last night, Jamaica played Guadeloupe.
Guadeloupe was winning that game for a long stretch of it.
Because of a known goal.
And what was the final score?
2-1, Jamaica.
Oh, Jamaica came back and won it.
Yeah,
okay.
Late.
So while I was watching it, Jamaica did not look impressive.
Yeah, but it's the same question that you asked me about Canada and the U.S. I mean, this is Jamaica's A team, right?
Jamaica has really fallen off the...
And they would play the BC team. So you feel confident that either against Jamaica or Costa Rica, the U.S. will get through
a lot of it will depend on the players that Berhalter picks.
Yeah.
And from the first two games, we'll know a lot more after the game against Canada. But I think some things are very clear to me. First off... While I've seen a bunch of highlight film and highlight video and so forth of Hopi or however pronounce his last name, the kid that plays
Hopi.
That kid's a baller.
Mm-hmm. He's good.
Really, really nice in the ball.
He was cut by the Galaxy Academy.
Story. I know that. Yeah. Really, really good player. I want to see more of Buzio. Young 18-year-old being asked to do a lot. I don't think he had a really good first half, but he improved in the second half.
Yeah, I thought he was very active.
He turned the ball over 25 times.
Okay, too active.
He's heading to Italy.
A little too active.
Well, not yet. That's not official yet. So he may also be going with what Sam's referring to. He may be the other American player that's going to Venezia with Tanner Tessman.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I think Matt Turner has been fantastic in goal. Mm-hmm. He's a real wonder to watch. I think Walker Zimmerman has been really, really good.
Yeah, he's been steady in the back.
And I want to see more of Daryl DK.
He looked good in the game, right?
And so, when we talk about formations and what Berhalter's trying to do, moving Kellen Acosta back in the middle, I don't like Kellen playing out wide, putting him in there with Buzio and somebody else to kind of help create. I don't know if it's rolled on or not. I do think the pieces are in there to be an effective team to win this deal, even against Mexico.
Yeah. Yeah, and Mexico looks okay. They haven't looked as the preeminent favorite, right?
You kind of get this. This is totally me making this up, right? But I have this weird sense that Tata calling in kind of an A team for this tournament on the heels of losing the Nations League tournament to the United States, all these guys appear to be a bit put out. And like, just not
why
up
are
for,
we, why are we
like,
having
why
a
are we doing this again when nobody else is doing this?
But this is, he needs tune-ups for qualifier, right? Qualifier start.
But don't the United States need tune-ups for qualifiers?
Yeah, but the difference with the U.S. and the Mexican national team is a lot of these U.S. players now play in Europe. It's crazy.
Yeah.
But more U.S. players play in Europe than Mexican players. It's kind of been like that for a while now. Mexican players rarely go to Europe. There's a lot of money being paid in Liga MX, so they don't need to leave Mexico for money. Some do. There's some playing there. Jimenez, you know, at Wolves being probably the best one so far, Chico Lozano. But anyway, U.S. plays at 4. Mexico plays at 9. We'll be at the Mexico-Salvador game. We'll know exactly what will happen. Well, we'll know exactly if Mexico will be locked in or not with the U.S. based on what the U.S. did against Canada. They play at 4.
At 4. And the other kind of interesting story is the growing progress of Funes Mori as a striker for Mexico, which I guess there's some controversy as to whether or not Tata Martinez should have called him up to the
Hugo
national
Sanchez,
team.
Hugo Sanchez, every time a national team player is a naturalized national team player, like somebody from another country gets papers to play for
the Funes Mori and his brother are Argentinian.
Correct, yeah. They went to high school in Arlington, played for the FC Dallas Academy for
pre-academy,
a
right.
Yeah, right, yeah. And then went to River Plate. His brother plays in Europe for Villarreal, and Funes Mori, the forward, plays in Liga MX. And Hugo Sanchez, every time a non-Mexican player makes the national team, throws up a stink bomb. He's all like, the national team needs to be strictly players born in Mexico. That's just his thing. It's his bit.
Does he even feel that way after he scores goals?
Hugo Sanchez?
Yeah.
After the guy he talks against scores goals?
Yeah.
I don't know. Good question. I should go and look at social media and see what he said after Funes Mori.
You don't have Hugo Sanchez's phone number?
Not that he would answer it.
Okay. All right.
And not that I'm going to call him to find out his reaction to Funes Mori scoring two
goals. All right. Well, the men play, the Canadian and the men, the Maple Leafs and the Eagles face off against each other tomorrow at 4:00. Should be interesting
to
watch.
Bump. Fair play. Fair play. Let the best team
no
win.
Bets.
There you go.
No all bets. Right. We're not going to do any bets.
But any betting interest for Mexico Salvador? Any rooting interest, Mexico Salvador? You just want to go
just
and watch
see
the spectacle, right?
I'm hoping it turns out to be the packed Cotton Bowl that I dreamt that it would be.
Yeah, well, I don't know. 40, maybe?
I was hoping it would be near capacity.
Oh, okay.
But based on the 15,000 from Wednesday night, maybe not. Maybe
yeah,
it will
I mean,
only be 30.
We're looking at 3 matches in 7 days. So it's a little bit tougher. But who knows? You know, Mexico, Salvador, that's one of the clasicos from the region. So it should be good.
Okay, when we come back, we'll do America's favorite soccer segment, The Dribble, next on The Kick Around. We always encourage people to support local soccer, and there's an opportunity to do that tonight, especially if you happen to live up near Denton. Denton Diablos, which play in the NPSL, are playing in their conference championship tonight, the Lone Star Conference, against Laredo. And they're playing up there tonight at 7:30. There are tickets available. We've tweeted out the link where you can get it. That's a fun little team, owned and managed locally. Fun group of guys, cool jerseys. Go check out the Denton Diablos as they've got a big game tonight. All right, let's do America's favorite soccer segment. It's The Dribble. Andy, we are mere days away from the premiere of season 2 of Ted Lasso.
Yeah, when's that drop?
The
27th or something?
I think 26th, the
23rd. 23rd, yep. Yeah. Okay.
And it's on Apple TV Plus. I am proud to say that we were the original bandwagoners of Ted Lasso, even pre-show. But once the show launched, we were the first to hype it up here in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. We told everybody to watch it. Nobody listened to us. And then everybody else started watching it and then said, oh, you need to watch it. And then it became the big thing.
Even I didn't listen to you.
I know.
I sit right over here.
I know.
In fairness, he never listens to you.
I know. So, Andy, you excited about season two?
I am. Seasons two of highly successful seasons one of shows sometimes are a little bit of a letdown and disappointment.
I have good news for you. The great Alan Sepinwall has given season two a big thumbs up.
He's seen it.
Or I don't know if he's seen all of it, but he's seen enough of it that he says that it is a continuation of all the good things from season one.
Well, good.
So I'm excited about that.
How are we going to do this? Are we going to give ourselves a little bit of time and then review?
Well, it's Apple TV Plus, so they won't release all of it at the same time.
Oh, that's right.
Right? It'll come out. They may release a couple of episodes and then one a week.
This is what we did last season, right? We reviewed a few at a time.
I think by the time we decided, well, because we were all suspect, right? Like we like everybody else, we thought this is going to be so stupid. Mm-hmm. And then we got through one episode, and we like off the air went, you know, that actually wasn't bad. I wonder, this might, all right, let's watch another. And so I think by the time we got to episode three or four, we were so sucked in and convinced it was the greatest thing, we began to talk about it on the air.
And then everybody else caught up. You know, for
eventually
Apple TV Plus, for Apple TV, this is their big thing.
Yes.
This is what they're hanging their hat on, this show.
It got like an insane amount of Emmy nominations.
It was good.
Yeah, was good.
Speaking of TV numbers, really quick, have you seen the numbers for Euros, the
yes.
Copa America final?
Yeah.
So 10 million when you add the Univision numbers to ESPN numbers for the Euros, that's good.
Very good.
Copa America final, 6 million between the two networks, 2 million on English language television. And then the men opening up the Gold Cup, the U.S. national team, $2 million for the opener against Haiti, which was a so-so game. Really, really strong TV viewership numbers for the tournaments being played this summer.
There is lots of interest in this stuff. It will be interesting to see how well the Gold Cup does as it continues on.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to guess it's going to depend on Mexico and or the United States or both.
Meeting each other and how far they go. Yep.
If either one gets knocked out, I think that's going to mess
You know what's
it up.
Fun to watch is we'll see him live tomorrow. El Salvador with Hugo Perez as the coach.
Yeah.
You know, a former national team player, U.S. national team player. Yeah.
The other thing, tying all this together, talking about cup finals and stuff, did you see the shirt Jason Sudeikis wore to an awards ceremony
today? Yes.
That he had made up with Rashford, Saka, and Sancho's name on it to support them in light of all the stuff that happened after their penalty misses.
Boy, and did he endear himself even more to soccer people, right? Especially in the U.S., who, you know.
Somebody on Twitter very correctly said, if Jason Sudeikis as Ted Lasso isn't giving the U.S. men's national team pep talks before every World Cup qualifier, somebody needs to get fired. And I agree with them, for sure.
Refereeing Euros, excellent, right? I thought overall, because there's always weak games, weak referees, but overall I thought the refereeing was really, really good. Like Copa America was very inconsistent. I thought the Euros really had solid refereeing.
Okay. I'll ask you this question. Did you enjoy how VAR was used in the European?
VAR.
Thank you, VAR alarm. I can't hear you. The VAR alarm went off.
What do you mean?
Well, it was implemented differently than we see it in the Premier League or in Major League Soccer. I'm just wondering if you overall thought it.
I did. I
it
thought
added
it was,
or
yeah, I thought it was fast. It was used judiciously, and it enhanced the end result of what we experienced.
Okay. Did you enjoy the clear directive that the referees were told to let play continue and not intervene by calling so many fouls? Because I don't know that to be a fact. It just that's my observation.
Man, I don't know. I don't know if I have an opinion. It didn't really affect me. I didn't know that was a directive.
I don't know that it was. Okay. I'm guessing that it was based on the fact that every referee, especially when they got to the knockout games, seemed to not be calling a lot of fouls. and just letting play go on.
But I kind of enjoyed that a little bit. VAR in Copa America took too long for decision making to happen.
Uh-huh.
Gold Cup, have you seen how we're getting to see inside the VAR room?
No, I haven't noticed that.
Yes, right. They've shown inside the VAR room, guys inside the VAR room pointing to things, the referee watching the monitor. I think that is, if EPL can, like the Premier League can institute that, that would be big.
Andy and I have been the long proponents of them broadcasting the communication between the center referee and the VAR official. Broadcasting VAR, that audio, would perfect the system in my mind.
I think some Copa America games, they did that as
well.
Oh, did
they?
Yes.
That would
so
be great.
So let's do this.
By the way, we always love to take note of young local players making good, and that includes, I think it was Friday's introduction of one Jonathan Tomkinson, who is from this local area, once played for Solar, also played for FC Dallas, then left and moved over to England, and has been playing for Norwich, the Canaries, which are newly promoted, and he made his first team debut in a preseason game just the other day.
And
he's a nice little player, big size, good-looking kid. He's been playing with their PL2 team for a while. In fact, I learned, I think he's one of their leading minutes players for Norwich in their PL2 team, which is the reserve league team for the Canaries. He may get time with their Premier League team this year. We don't know. But the cool thing is that his father reached out to our friend Buzz Carrick at Third Degree.
Oh, did he?
And how cool is this, Andy? His kid has a contract to play soccer in England. His dad got to go over there and was there when his son was subbed on for his first team minutes and got a photo of him subbing in.
Nice. Wait till he debuts in the actual Premier League.
I know, but how cool is that to be there for your kid's first minutes with the first team on a Premier League side? Yeah. That just has
to
be the coolest
thing. And the story
that
he kind of came out of nowhere too, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's all these kids that go through academies and, you know, generate a lot of interest, and then there's this other set of kids. Keaton Parks is a great example of a guy that was from the Frisco area, figured out how to get himself to Portugal, and now is a regular starter for NYCFC.
Hope on the current national team.
Yeah, there's all that. That's a whole thing that we never really pay a lot of attention to. So congratulations to Jonathan Tomkinson and his family here from the Dallas-Fort Worth area. And if you're looking for a team to support in the Premier League, which, by the way, we will bring back the Supreme Wheel of Allegiance before the season starts.
Yes.
You may just want to nab Norwich while you can, because that's a lot of fun. This is the most interesting news that I've read about our sport in the last week. The Italian league Serie A has decided to ban the color green as a primary color for any club moving forward.
Not green?
Are you making this up?
No.
Why do I not know about this?
I started reading about this a few days ago.
For TV clarity, huh?
They are saying that there is somebody or people in the Serie A leadership that think that when teams wear green, they become too camouflaged against the field or pitch and make for difficult viewing on television.
Okay.
Which, it seems weird to me, with high-definition television, 4K, whatever, that this now suddenly is a concern of some league front office. Not that I even think it's a real issue to begin with.
So this came from high up at Serie A.
Yes.
So it's got to be a different reason.
There's a couple teams. I can't remember the name, Sassuolo or whatever. They wear green and black stripes. So I think their shirt is enough, not just green, that they'll escape the ban.
Yeah.
The team that we've been talking about with Tanner and Buzio, Venezia, they've got kind of a multicolor. Green is an element to it, but not the primary color.
Goalkeepers will still be able to wear green.
Goalkeepers are exempt from this. Now, for example, I can't remember which club it was last year that had the kind of mint green jersey. I mean, was that Juventus? I can't remember.
Well, Lazio had lime green away kits.
Okay, so
those are out.
Those are out.
Wow.
Yeah.
Weird.
Isn't that weird?
Atalanta also had green in their away kit.
Oh, is that another one? Okay.
Yeah.
So I've never heard this before. I've yet to read like a really clear, like, is it just one person with way too much power just got frustrated
because they were having a hard time
or
seeing it.
Or somebody doesn't like one of the teams that just came up.
Or has a really poorly calibrated television at home.
Or some high executive lost a bet to another high executive over drinks one day.
Because I was thinking, here in the United States, we've got, well, the two obvious ones, Portland and Seattle.
Yeah, Seattle.
They wear variations of the color green, not the same. And I don't ever think, I've never thought that that's been an issue.
Not in our high technology televisions.
Now, green isn't a super popular color.
Wonder if in black and white, does it? No, it wouldn't be.
But who watches in black and white?
Well, it's 2021, know. Andy.
Yeah, no, Andy.
Just maybe they're looking out for the four people that have black and white TVs.
Screw those people. Get a new TV.
Oh, Sam, that's not
Look,
nice.
TVs aren't that expensive. Go down to Walmart, get you one for like $100. Like, come on. It's not
nice.
Don't strip us of green kit because you can't afford a decent TV. It's not fair.
Is this going to affect you? You got a favorite team in Serie A?
So
who's your? No, I'm honestly asking.
I'm actually not sure. So currently, I might have one because in Football Manager, I'm currently helming a very disappointing AC Milan team for about 5 seasons, and I'm kind of falling in love with that, but I haven't put a ring on it yet.
We haven't. Have you? You're Fiorentina because that's where you.
Fiorentina, yeah. Fiorentina is my.
I got to figure out who my Serie A team is.
Yeah, so it's funny because now that there's all these American kids playing in Serie A, everybody's scrambling. They think that it's on ESPN. It's not. It's moving to Paramount Plus this season. So you're gonna have to have Paramount Plus to watch Serie A. You're gonna have to have ESPN to watch the Bundesliga and La Liga, and you're gonna have to have Peacock to watch the Premier League
and Apple Plus to watch Ted Lasso.
Yes,
the true important Premier League.
Do I have to root for the Burnley of each of those leagues, or can I pick the best team of each league?
So
that way I can
actually
see something good.
I don't have a team either. Josh and I are both open for an allegiance.
The Italian commitment. Supreme Wheel Allegiance.
Yes, let's do it. Yeah, because Peter's the only one that has a team. Let's all three spin the wheel for Serie A.
Yeah, okay.
I'm in.
All right, we'll make
you're on it, Sam?
We'll make an Italian Supreme Wheel of Allegiance just for the three of you.
Can you find the Supreme Wheel Master of Serie A?
I'm sure I might have to have Google Translate, but we can do it.
All right.
Well, that'll be easy.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Now, unfortunately, I don't know enough about Serie A to tell you if you ended up on the good or bad side of the wheel.
We're all going to find out together, and we are going to have our correspondent anyway, right? One day we're going to identify somebody.
Yeah, we haven't found anybody to be our Serie A correspondent. I talked to Tyler. I asked Tyler, and Tyler was like, I'm too busy watching the Bundesliga.
No, I think he was more amenable to it. We'll speak.
There's got to be somebody out there, right?
Somebody watches enough Italy that they could
do it, so I don't have to get Paramount Plus.
Okay, so if you're wondering why you don't see green teams in Italy anymore, that's the reason. I don't think that'll last long. That'll have to change. That's the weirdest thing. All right, that does it for another fun-filled episode of America's favorite soccer segment known as The Dribble. Andy, we've made it through another fun-filled edition of the Kick Around. Did we get to everything we wanted to talk about today?
I think so. There was so much. We didn't talk about food, but we'll save the...
Are you going to have food?
We'll save the Cook Around episode for another
show. So we're going to the Cotton Bowl tomorrow.
We're going to get fed, Peter.
What are we going to eat at the Cotton Bowl? Will I get a corny dog?
Tailgate.
We're going to be in a suite.
Wait, what?
We're going to the sitting in the suite. Yeah, I love it when my big wig friend Andy hooks us up proper.
Always forgets about the little people. Josh and I would like to go to a suite, but no. We'd like to go to Austin. No.
Do you really feel like you deserve to be a part of that trip?
Deserves got nothing to do with it, brother.
There's only two seats, and those the seats are for Andy and me.
Well, have fun then. We'll just be back here not going to Austin. Enjoy traffic. it takes you 7 hours to get there.
No, that's not.
That's rude. That's very, very rude. All right, Andy. Well done show today, sir.
High five.
I will give you on
good luck tomorrow.
Soccer grading score of 1 to 10. I give you an 8.
An 8? Wow. Thank you.
You do get an
8. I exceeded expectations.
Thank you to DJ for doing tickers. I love that, DJ. Thank you to Sam for producing and Josh for operating the board. P1s, we love and adore you. Go on, get out, get stuck in, and win your 50s.
All right, no draw.
Broadcasting live from the TXU Energy Mothership at Victory Plaza, hard by the AAC. This is Sports Radio 96.7 and 1310, The Ticket. KTCK AM Dallas-Fort Worth, KTCK FM Flower Mound.